You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Locked On Podcast Network. I want to thank you once again for making us part of your daily routine. Got a lot of people tweeting me today from all over the world, in Africa, in Europe, everywhere, man. You guys are listening wherever you guys are, part of your daily routine.
Hey,
internationally.
Shout out to the UK, man. Somebody shout from the UK wanted a shout out today. I don't know who he was.
Yeah, man.
But he wanted a shout out. So shout out to the UK. We respect you guys listening from the UK.
I know we got people listening from everywhere, Australia. I know we got people in the Philippines. We got people everywhere, man. And just taking us with you wherever you go every day, on your morning drive, wherever it is. Thank you so, so much for taking us along with you. We're happy to be part of your daily routine. We're the Rain and Jays. You heard him, Jay King from MassLive.com. I am, of course, John Corrales from RedsArmy.com, amongst other places. And we haven't been able to talk to Jay since the season started. So let's just kind of, it's been a, like we were talking before the show, Jay, you're saying it's already a wild week for the Boston Celtics.
Just a whirlwind, man. Like, you go into the season, so much optimism. Then 5 minutes and 11 seconds in, Hayward goes down. One of the worst injuries, probably the worst injury I've ever seen in person. Like, the whole arena knew immediately it was really bad. It was just, ugh. Just disgusting, something that will stick with me for a long time. And now it's like, here you go, young guys. Here you go, Jalen. Here you go, Jason. The ball is yours. Do what you want with it. Suddenly, the Celtics are super young. Suddenly, they only have two stars. Suddenly, Brown and Tatum are being asked to do a lot more than we thought they were going to have to do. So, just a wild couple days. Then we got Kyrie's struggles in game two. And I don't think that's much to worry about. Like, Kyrie is going to score. Kyrie is going to score efficiently. I think he's trying. Doesn't it seem like he's trying to fit into the new system? Like, trying
he
really
does.
Hard?
No, of course. Yeah, he really is. He does not seem like the Kyrie that everybody knows. That's for sure. There's no doubt about that he's really trying to work things in. And now, I don't know, because it's nobody's inside his head, but it feels like now, even especially after the Hayward injury, one of the things that I said after the Hayward injury was like, okay, well, we've got to kind of go back to some of the old Kyrie, some of the Kyrie we've known, because when plays break down,
I miss
down,
the old Kyrie.
But when the play breaks down, they need somebody to create. This team is very much like last year's Celtics team, where it was Isaiah and everybody else. And when shit went wrong, Isaiah had to go in and be like, all right, I got you. I'll bail you out. And Kyrie's not there yet. Kyrie's not in bailout mode. He only had a few kind of takeover moments in the fourth quarter, where we know if Isaiah Thomas was here, and I'm not trying to bring that up, but
that's a comparison that's going to be made. It's going to be made throughout the whole season because of the trade.
We saw last season that there was no qualms. There were no qualms about Isaiah saying, all right, fourth quarter, the offense is going to shit. I got you. I'm going to take over, tap the wrist. Everybody go crazy. You know what time it is. Boom, done. Now, Kyrie might get there, but I mean, part of me wonders if after the Hayward injury, is Kyrie especially trying to get other people involved because he knows he's going to need help. So I agree with you. This is not the Kyrie Irving that most people have been used to seeing from his time in Cleveland.
It just feels like like he's trying to fit in so badly that he's not being who he is. And that's just like a deadly score. And it seems like it's affecting him like he doesn't know when to go. He doesn't know when to hold back. He doesn't know. He hasn't figured it out yet. It just seems like right now he's in the feeling out phase. And obviously, like, there are a lot of reasons why he should be in the feeling out phase and why this should take a long time. Like, first of all, it's his second game with a brand new team that has tons of young players who everyone admitted was just screwing up the plays left and right in the last game. And then second of all, like, Hayward goes down, and Hayward was going to be one of the guys who made things easier. You know, Hayward, Al Horford, we talked all summer, all preseason about how easy those guys are to play with, about how much pressure they were going to take off Kyrie because they're such good secondary playmakers, because they were going to help him get open. And now Kyrie doesn't have that anymore. So everything he was getting acclimated to is gone now. And now it's brand new. The Celtics are playing a ton of young guys. Marcus Morris is still out. There's just a lot of figuring things out going on right now. And still, you know, the Celtics had the Cavs on the ropes in game one. They had the Bucks on the ropes in game two. They, without a couple of fourth quarter collapses, Celtics could be 2-0 right now. Obviously, like, the fourth quarter was something that they were really good at last year with the continuity. But with everything being new, it feels like they're just not there yet. And maybe they'll get there. One thing we should talk about, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have shown some stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Man, those guys, I am very impressed by the both of them. I am especially impressed by Tatum because he has shown, like, I'm not saying that, like, Jaylen Brown is just, like, to lead the team twice, two nights in a row. I mean, he's having an amazing first couple of games here. Tatum, though, does not look like a rookie out there on offense. He doesn't look flustered. He's not moving too fast. That's a hallmark of being confused out there, is just moving too fast and trying to get the ball out of your hands as fast as possible, or making out of control moves. And generally speaking, over those two games, Tatum has been in complete control. He has shown, there was a post up, and I know that Mike and Tommy were, it was last night, they were talking about how it's kind of like a veteran move. He drops his shoulders, gets a couple of bumps. After the bump, he steps back, clears space, and hits a fadeaway jumper. That's a veteran-type move, knowing how to use your body, knowing where to hit a defender, and how to use that momentum against the defender, clear some space, and get a shot off. That's veteran-type stuff. So it's not like super advanced, but it's not rookie stuff. So I'm impressed by just the maturity of Tatum's game, where he's moving at a nice, comfortable pace, and he's getting himself a lot of scoring opportunities. So, and I'm also impressed by Jaylen Brown, but I feel like you're more impressed by Jaylen Brown than Tatum.
Well, to me, Brown's been one of the biggest surprises, because I feel like you knew Tatum was going to play at that pace. You knew Tatum kind of had this mature game. You knew he was going to come in and just be like this calm 19-year-old. Jaylen Brown, I didn't know he was going to be as relentless attacking the rim as he has been. He almost feels like he's just beginning to grasp his powers. Like there were a few times in the, there were a few times in the Cleveland game when he was coming down, handling the ball, and LeBron James was guarding him. And Jaylen Brown, it was almost like his eyes lit up, like he was being guarded by a chump, and it was LeBron James. And he's like trying to make dribble moves, and he just has no hesitation, no fear. That dude has just been relentless. And so I obviously the Hayward injury changed things, but I didn't think we would see this level of attack from Jaylen Brown this quickly. And there have been some issues, like he had 23 shots in the first game, no assists. He still needs to probably reel it in sometimes, but the way he's attacked and the way he's gotten places, and especially in transition, just the ferociousness with which he's attacked the basket, I'm very impressed by the strides that Jaylen Brown has taken. And the mentality, to me, like, it's the mentality that stands out the most. Like, he's still totally figuring things out. He's still very much an unformed prospect at this point. And he's just taking dudes on and going straight to the rim. I'm thoroughly enjoying the up and down Jaylen Brown experience this year. He has been, through two games, just a force attacking the rim.
No, I'm not going to disagree with that at all. And he is really figuring it out. And we saw over the summer that, and I mentioned this last night, he spent time in summer league, he spent time in the preseason really working on attacking. Even when it didn't work, the results weren't there, he just kept going with it. You can see he was trying to work on aggressiveness, finding ways to get to the rim. The one knock that I would have on Brown so far, and this is just nitpicking, I guess, is that he just hasn't been able to finish at the rim consistently yet. It's amazing that he's getting to the rim. He's doing a great job scoring, you know, 25 points in the first game. And what do you have in the second game? Where's the box score?
I think he had 17, right? Was it 17?
Yes, 18. Sorry. 18.
My bad, folks.
Yeah. And led the team both nights. Good shooting night overall in the second game against Milwaukee. But still, a few drives to the basket where he didn't finish. So that's the next step. And I feel like that's kind of been the criticism. And I don't say that negatively. Like, that's just the next step. It's a second-year player, you know, two games into his second season. So he's still years, literally years away from figuring out exactly what he's going to be and what he's going to do. But I think he's playing at a very high level. And if he can continue to do this, then it changes a lot of what the Celtics are going to be looking for post-Hayward injury. So
if there's one aspect of the Hayward injury that's a positive, it's that Brown and Tatum are now going to be relied on to do more things. Like, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum never would have gotten those opportunities if Hayward was healthy. It just wouldn't have happened. They wouldn't have gotten the touches. They wouldn't have been fed the ball. They would not have been asked to be so aggressive. They wouldn't, like, Tatum spent some time on Giannis. Jaylen Brown has guarded LeBron and Giannis. Like those two guys, they've been asked to do so much, and they're not fully ready for that yet. And that's obvious. But they're a lot more ready than most 19 and 20 year olds. I think those two guys, they've got a chance to be really good.
I just want to point out that I appreciate the effort in getting Giannis's name correct. That's a big step in your progression there, young guy.
I'm not much of a pronouncer, but every once in a while, the kid steps up.
That's it. You know, speaking of young guys, they're taking next steps in their development. You have not hit your podcast prime, buddy. You're just reaching it. You're getting there, and this is a nice sign that you're figuring it out. The game is slowing down for you, my man.
Oh, man.
I do want to point out, by the way, if you guys want to go check out the Locked On NBA podcast, I did do a segment with David Locke on Locked On NBA, the current out now episode. So search for Locked On NBA. I was talking to him, giving the local angle on the Gordon Hayward injury, what's next, what the Celtics, how this affects the Celtics, and all of this stuff. So it's just a different take, different questions, and just check out the Locked On NBA podcast for that.
Which I've just been alerted is the number 198 podcast on iTunes.
Our podcast is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Locked On Celtics podcast is now in the top 200. We are ranked in the top 2.
But we're rising. We're like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Like, we're just beginning to scratch the surface here.
Of course, let's just say this, that top 200 of all podcasts, every podcast that exists on iTunes from every genre, from every angle, we are the top 200 of all podcasts. So suck on that. That's pretty good.
Suck on that.
All right. I do want to point out that we are relying on a lot of these guys, young guys, like we said. We talk about the positives, and I don't want to single out. Whenever you say I don't want to do X, you're about to do X. So I am going to single out Semi Ojeleye. We talk about things that could have gone different, especially in the Milwaukee game. Before the show, while I was waiting for you to get done with your stuff in Philly, I was rewatching the fourth quarter, which that's just a fun thing to do in that fourth quarter. And Semi Ojeleye struggled a lot, blew some defensive assignments. The alley-oop that basically crushed Aaron Baines.
Yeah, RIP Aaron Baines. RIP.
Yeah. Semi went out there. It was just didn't know where to be on offense. There were a couple of times when Kyrie was waving him off and go there. You're supposed to be there. So there's a lot of confusion. When we talk about the impact that Gordon Hayward, and obviously Gordon Hayward's injury is the big injury, but even if they had Marcus Morris last night, Morris would have been a much better option out there defending Antetokounmpo. He would have been a much better option offensively because not only would he have had a better idea of where to be, he can actually create. He's actually pretty good in isolation situations. So we talk injuries. No one's really talking about the Morris injury. Just having Morris last night instead of Ojeleye would have been a big difference.
Yeah, Morris is going to make a big difference because that's, what, 35 minutes? 30, 35 minutes? You got to think now that
absolutely,
Hayward's
right
out,
now, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's another big physical skilled wing. And right now they're relying on basically just young guys. Abdul Nader was the first sub. He was the first freaking
sub. Isn't that
nuts? I was a stunner, but it's because because Brad Stevens, I almost said LeBron for some reason. I don't know why.
Because Giannis is LeBron, part two?
I don't know, but Brad,
or he was last night?
It's because Brad Stevens wants to stay versatile, and he wants to stay switchy. And Abdul Nader can do that. Ojeleye can do that. And Daniel Tice, to an extent, who also played some minutes, can do that. And so that's why he went that way. But Morris can do that, and he's significantly better, significantly more experienced, and probably won't botch plays. So he's going to make a big difference, especially now with Hayward out. Morris is even more important. He's more critical to what the Celtics are doing. They need him healthy, and they need him healthy quickly. This Celtics team is just going to grow all season. Like, obviously, growing pains in the first two games. It was very disappointing first two games on a number of levels. But, like, all season long, this team is just going to grow. It's so young. There are so many talented guys. There are so many players, like Kyrie Irving even, who should adapt and get more comfortable as the season goes on. I think this Celtics team is a long time from playing its best basketball. It should just keep building and building all through the season.
Yeah, keep in mind, people, that the Celtics had a chance to win in Cleveland. The Celtics had a fourth quarter lead, so against Milwaukee. That,
by the way, shout out to Terry Rozier. Terry Rozier has been really good through two games.
Yeah, he has been. He has been, absolutely. The Celtics have had opportunities to win these games. So that's a positive. They're not just going out there and getting crushed. The only time they've looked really, really, really bad was immediately after the Hayward injury and for a little bit of a stretch down the fourth quarter of the Milwaukee game. So for the second half in Cleveland, they did what they were supposed to do, which is take advantage of really terrible defensive guards that they have over there. And for three quarters, they did okay, and they hung with a very tough Milwaukee team. They made a bunch of mistakes, and ultimately those mistakes cost them. But they had opportunities down the stretch, even through some bad play. They had opportunities to take control of that game and win. They just couldn't do it. So there's not a lot to panic over right now. These guys are still good.
I would say, though, their lack of outside shooting is real.
That's going to be a problem. And now this is where we get into this disabled player exception. And first of all,
but who's out there?
That's the question. That's the question. That's what I want to get into, because that's the question. I'm sure you're getting it a ton on Twitter. I'm getting a ton on Twitter. What is it? What are the Celtics going to do? People start throwing out names, and then all of a sudden it's all the same. Gerald Green, Monte Ellis, like people just throwing these names out there.
And you know,
trading
what?
For Nerlens Noel. Like,
and you know what? The Celtics aren't going to win a title this year. It's not going to happen. Like, they shouldn't be searching for veteran help. Like, they're better off, to me, rather than signing one of those vets. Give all those minutes. Keep giving them to Tatum. Keep giving them to Brown. Let them go through the bumps and bruises and keep growing. Give those minutes to Ojale and Nader even. Like, give them to all those guys and see what happens. Look, Gerald Green, he's maybe better than some of those guys, but what is he going to do for you long term versus the guys on the current team, super young? If you develop them, if they grow, there's potential that they can help you long term, as well as not being too much worse than Gerald Green was last year right now. So I don't
disagree.
I don't see who's out there that could make a huge difference for the Celtics team.
Well, here's my take on this. First of all, let's explain a little bit for people who aren't really aware of the disabled player exception. If a player
they still have the 15th roster spot too,
right? So they can just go do that, or they can use the exception if it's granted to them, which it should be. That if a player is determined to be out for the rest of the season, which Hayward's agent said he would be. So if the Celtics can't apply, and the league must approve the exception. And if they do, you get a player for a portion of that. It's an exception for your cap, like any other exception. It's for a portion of that player, the interplayer's contract, because Hayward makes so much money. That would be over $8 million if the Celtics have an exception. They could go over their cap, whatever. They could just go sign a guy for up to 8.4. There's nobody out there right now that's worth that kind of money, because if he was, he'd be playing.
Nobody.
We'd be signed already.
My man Brian Robb put together a list of possible options. He's got Gerald Green, Anthony Morrow, Brandon Rush, James Young, Isaiah Cannon, Monte Ellis, Jameer Nelson.
Yeah, no. Like, none of those guys.
Like puke on top of puke on top of garbage.
So here's what I think. If the Celtics want to go out and try and find some shooting, that I agree with you. I think there's a best of both worlds scenario here. Wait until the buyout market comes along. You give the minutes right now to your young guys. See how it works out. Because you're right, this was never going to be a championship season anyway. So just let Tatum play his minutes. Let Brown figure it out. Let these guys go figure it out now. It's different. This feeling, this season is just completely different. Then you just kind of see what's out there. Now the Celtics, if they are approved and they have that $8 million in their pockets, then if a buyout comes along for a guy that can shoot, then they can go ahead and outbid other teams for that guy's services and bring him on for the end of the season. If they feel like they want to make a run. Look, they don't have to worry about a draft position. They're not doing anything. The Lakers may take care of that. So let's just kind of play this out, give the young guys their time, and then wait to see after the trade deadline who gets bought out, and let the Celtics go spend $2, $3, $4 million, whatever, on a guy and add him for the stretch run. And this way you can kind of appease maybe Kyrie Irving, show him like, look, even though there's an injury, we're going to give you some extra help. We're not going to completely waste this season, and let's kind of see where that goes. I think, to me, that I think is the best way to handle this, so that everybody wins.
Yeah, let's talk about the Hayward timeline too, because I think that came out after the show last night. So
yes,
Hayward's agent said he's likely to miss the rest of the season. Celtics didn't put an exact timeline on it. Do you think there's any chance Hayward plays this year?
I think there's an outside chance. And the reason why I think it's an outside chance is, and I don't know exactly what the exact damage is in his ankle. I know they say clean break. Okay, so the bone broke. I mean, you saw it. Hell, we heard it on the broadcast. We saw the dislocation. So, and they reset that on the floor. That's great. Was there any ligament damage? I haven't heard anything about ligament damage. If there wasn't, then that just seems like it's a bone that they will set and give it.
Dr. Corrales over here.
Well, no, I mean, look, if there's any, dude, my old teammates will attest. If there's anything I know, it's how to deal with injuries. So if there's no ligament damage, then you give the bone time to heal. You go through the rehab. You go through the process of getting your legs and your wind back. And by then, it's probably close to the end of the season. And you might determine, well, what's the point of having him come back for the last month?
I think that's the key here. What's the point?
Right.
Like when Paul George came back, it wasn't the same injury, obviously, but he played like 15 minutes a game. He wasn't that good. He maybe got his legs back underneath him, maybe like increased his confidence with the leg a little bit. But I don't think Hayward, if he comes back even, will be close to 100% at that point. Like he'll need time to get back into shape. He'll need time to get acclimated. He's not going to help you to the point you would need him to help you in the playoff run, to the point where you could be really competitive with the top teams. So I think he's better off the way they're saying, like just be super cautious, bring him back next year, and ride the young guys, man. It's the Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum show.
I gotcha. I totally feel all that, but if it was coming back from an ACL, if it was coming back from any sort of ligament type of damage, if it was coming back from a muscle or a back issue, I would completely agree. But if we're just talking about coming back from a broken leg, once the bone is healed, it's healed. It's done. There's no let's ease him back. From there, it's all mental and cardiovascular. If it's just the broken bone, and I don't want to say just because we saw how gruesome the injury was, but in the overall scheme of things, if we're only talking about a bone healing and the foot operating correctly, then once the bone is healed and it's that's it. So there's no, we hope he doesn't there's no re-injuring a broken bone. It's just, it's broken and it's fixed. So if, let's pretend he's rehabbing and it's February, and he's back in shape for like March. I think if he's physically ready, if that injury is healed, if he's mentally ready and he's in pretty good shape where he's not going to, you know, hurt himself just because he's out of shape, then he should come back and play and get some more any reps you can get even at the end of the season with these guys. That helps. That helps. It helps him give him information. So what he needs to work on over the summer, because he still has room to improve. He still has things that he wants to work on. And if he knows, if he has a month, let's just say it's a month. If he has that month with the starters, then it's not about winning games or winning a playoff series. I don't care about that this year. But if he has an opportunity to go out there and work with these guys, a full, healthy squad, if he is in shape and healthy, then he should do it and learn about these guys' tendencies and then take that into the summer so he has at least some information or something to work on.
If he gets to 100%, I'm with you. The other story out there, though, Chris Paul saying he was interested in the Celtics this past summer. How weird was that?
That came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
that
really totally came out of nowhere.
That whole saga between Chris Paul and the Clippers and, you know, Doc, it dredges up Doc saying, and it's kind of funny that Doc is now in a position to say, if you're going to leave, just leave and don't burn it down, just go. But then when he left Boston, he kind of sort of lingered on some of the things of why he left. So he did a little bit of what Chris Paul is doing, but now he's on the other side of it. And he's like, ah, you shouldn't do that, which is kind of, it's just kind of interesting how that's all worked out. I don't even put any stock in the Paul to the Celtics. I know the Celtics have in the past tried really hard to get Chris Paul they multiple times. So of course there was some interest, but he said it himself. It didn't make any sense to pay for the Celtics to pay him $35 million. No way.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. But so the two takeaways to me are this. One, if you didn't know before, because of Al Horford and Gordon Hayward, the Celtics are a bona fide free agent destination. Even the free agents who openly admit they don't make sense for Boston are interested in going to Boston. Brad Stevens is a draw. Danny Ainge has built a program that people want to play for. The Celtics are a huge, huge draw for free agents right now. Everybody knows that. Like, Chris Paul, he openly admitted they'd be stupid to pay me, and still he was interested in the Boston Celtics. The other takeaway to that is, did he have an inkling that the Celtics might move on from Isaiah Thomas? Because obviously that would have been a bizarre fit if he went there and played next to Isaiah Thomas. It would have been even more bizarre fit than James Harden and Chris Paul. So did he think that maybe he could share the backcourt with Isaiah Thomas? Or did he think that they would move Isaiah to make room for him? Or did he hope that? Or, I mean, obviously he knew it was a long shot. He knew it didn't make any sense. I'm probably reading too far into this, but it just opens up the discussion about what kind of the Boston front office was thinking like 2 months before the Kyrie Irving trade even happened.
Yeah, he knew that wherever he went, the way it went down in Houston was going to be the way it went down with any of the teams that he went to, because he would say, I'm interested in going only to this team. So he said it about Houston, but let's pretend he said it about Boston. Then he would have forced the Clippers' hand, he would have forced Doc's hand to say, all right, well, I guess we got to deal with Boston now, and how do we make this happen?
He made no sense, though. He made no sense. He was right. Like,
no, of course not. But if it went down that way, I'm sure he didn't – I don't think – to answer your question, I don't think he had any inkling of what Ainge was going to do. I also don't think he cared about what Ainge was going to do. If he said, I'm going to Boston, he just wanted to go to Boston and figure it out. And maybe in that discussion, he would have said, hey, try to keep Isaiah because I love Isaiah. Figure something else out. And look, and we know, but the way the salaries were to make that match, they might not have had to move Isaiah. They might have gone a different way. They might have done like Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, and backfill, you know, the other salaries kind of to make it match. So
yeah, but that just made no sense.
You're right. It doesn't make any sense.
Kyrie Irving made sense because he's younger, because he didn't have a hip injury,
exactly,
because of all those reasons. Chris Paul is older. Chris Paul, I don't think at this stage he's as good as Isaiah Thomas was last year. Obviously there's the whole hip thing. So, and he also had the same contract situation where if he opted in, he only has 1 year left. So on a lot of levels, that never made sense, but still interesting that he put Boston in his four destinations.
Before we go, I want to end on a Hall of Fame Brad Stevens story.
That was awesome.
Which, if you don't follow Mark D'Amico on Twitter, you should. It is hilarious. There was a point in last night's game where Brad got pissed off at Jaylen Brown.
Now, he screwed up a play.
Yeah.
And Kyrie Irving yelled at him first, and then I'll let you take it from here.
No, then Brad slammed his fist on the scorer's table before yelling at Jaylen Brown and going into the timeout. And now, two things here. One, Brad Stevens has a misconception of being overly polite and, oh, shucks, gosh darn. He yells at these guys. He swears at these guys. He is prone to these emotional fits. So he had one with Jaylen Brown. However, the Hall of Fame aspect is that he still maintained that reputation afterwards by returning to the scorer's table and apologizing to everybody there for slamming the scorer's table, which is so purely Brad. And I forget who said it, who tweeted it. I don't know if it was Jared Weiss. He said it's like a Brad Stevens meme come to life. It was a hilarious anecdote.
Brad is that really was a Hall of Fame Brad story. Shout out to D'Amico for letting the world in on that Brad Stevens story.
Yeah, it's so funny because, you know, I've said it a bunch of times on the podcast where I've noticed the evolution of Brad Stevens. He is much more sarcastic today than he was on day one of his coaching tenure in Boston.
Although he hasn't been sarcastic this year. I think with the new team, he doesn't know what he can say yet. He doesn't know what he can do, and he wants to be super optimistic.
Yeah, no, of course. But he's much more – I still think, though, he still flashes those, like, that kind of like little bit of, you know, mischievous kind of behavior, a little bit. But you're right, not as much as last year, but still it's there. But he still has that gosh darn aw shucks type of side to him. So,
oh, golly, I'm sorry, guys. I didn't mean to do that.
That is a spectacular place to end this podcast. And then this week of podcasts, I just want to thank everybody for listening. I know we've been going through a bit of a transition here. Thanks to everybody for sticking with us, even when I mistakenly uploaded the wrong podcast last night. So for like 5 minutes, the wrong podcast was up. My bad. That was my fault. So thanks for everybody to everybody for sticking around through not only the transition but my stupidity.
I haven't even done that yet.
No, that was a good one for me. I'm glad people caught that. The good thing is that this is amazing, and this is why I love all of you who are listening. I posted it. I got up, grabbed my phone, walked out of my office. By the time I got to my kitchen, somebody was like, "You posted the wrong podcast. This was last night's show all over again." Seriously, like I took 20 steps before somebody already caught it. That's how much people are waiting for us to post these shows. It was immediate. So thanks, everybody. If we screw something else up, let us know. But thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing to the podcast. And we've got a bunch of new listeners. I want to thank you for subscribing. Rate us 5 stars. We're in that top 200. We want to get to the top 100, all right? We're not happy until we get to number 1. So you got to rate us 5 stars. You got to spread the word. You got to tell your friends who are Celtics fans who are not listening to the podcast. We are your only daily podcast, the best Celtics podcast out there. So spread the word. Help us rise in the rankings. Give us a good review. Give us the 5 stars. And listen on a daily basis. We're here for you Monday through Friday throughout the season. So thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales. Locked On Celtics. Millie.